we are meant to imagine the night of Egypt and the slavery, the servitude that darkness would have embodied, as well as the coming of redemption in the midst of the night, hence a midnight miracle. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah episode 194, The Midnight Ride and the Nighttime Mitzvah. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. These are the famous opening words to a well-known poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. There are those who criticize it today, knowing that it casts Revere as the only hero of that evening in the story of Lexington and Concord, whereas in fact it was Samuel Prescott who ultimately made it to the intended location in order to communicate the warning that British troops were coming. But in fact, the power of the poem lies first and foremost in the way that it describes hope and help arriving in the darkness of night, hence the conclusion of the poem. So through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm, a cry of defiance and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore, forborne on the night wind of the past, through all our history to the last, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed, and the midnight message of Paul Revere. This point about the poem is made in an interesting article on the website of the Isabella Gardner Museum, which has an original manuscript of the poem in Longfellow's hand. As the article puts it, quote, "Longfellow's seeming disregard for historical fact, Revere never even reached Concord, has irked many readers. But Longfellow's poem isn't a history lesson. If anything, it's a lesson about history, about what history feels like, what it sounds like. In a poem set almost entirely in the dark, we hear everything, from the tramp of the feet of the British in Charlestown, to the hurry of hooves as Revere's horse speeds away, to the rooster that crows in Medford. Longfellow didn't know what audiobooks were, but if they had existed in his time, he would have loved them." End quote. The article fascinatingly further informs us that the powerful conclusion of Longfellow's poem came about through a series of edits. We know it again as, "In the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed and the midnight message of Paul Revere." The article tells us that, quote, "But these lines didn't just materialize out of thin air. They were the product of endless revision," end quote, describing the process of the composition and the interaction between Longfellow and his editor, James Fields. The Isabella Gardner Museum website tells us that, quote, "Here is the ending of the poem in the Gardner manuscript as Longfellow had first copied it from his pencil draft, substituting people for men. In the hour of peril, the people will hear the midnight message of Paul Revere and the hurrying hoofbeat of his steed." But then he really got going, the article continues, crossing out several words and adding an entirely new line. "In the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the midnight message of Paul Revere and the hurrying hoofbeat of his steed." Longfellow's revision piles up the emergencies, darkness and peril and need, thus making Revere's message seem more urgent. At the same time, the line he inserts, "the people will waken and listen to hear," creates a pleasant sense of completion, referring the reader back to the poem's beginning. But, the article goes on, something was still awry, and editor Fields knew precisely what. In a letter to Longfellow of November 13, 1860, he proposed reversing the last two lines. And lo and behold, Fields's faint pencil marks appear next to the last two lines in Gardner's manuscript, a 1 next to the penultimate line and a 2 next to the last. Fields' intervention changes the rhyme scheme, but the poem now ends with a flourish on the word Revere. "In the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear 2, and the hurrying hoofbeat of a steed 1, the midnight message of Paul Revere." End quote. Hope, bravery in the night. This is the theme of the poem. We think about this as we ponder our mitzvah for the day, which, like the one discussed yesterday, appears in the Counting of the Commandments by Nachmanides and his listing of mitzvot that, in his view, Maimonides left out of his own Sefer HaMitzvot, codification of the commandments. One commandment emphasized by Nachmanides is a stressing in the Torah that the paschal offering must be eaten at night, meaning during the Seder evening, and a warning lest it be eaten earlier during the day. This might seem obvious to us, but in fact, a warning is necessary because the very ritual of the slaughtering of the offering in the temple took place during the day on 14 Nisan. And so it is understandable that a danger existed that one might come to consume the offering as well while it is still daylight. In Nachmanides' words, the mitzvah is shenitztavenu bekeves hanishchat biyom arba asar ba'erev, that we were commanded regarding the lamb that is slaughtered on the 14th in the day, ba'erev, toward the evening, shehu yachel balayla lo biyom, that it must be eaten at night, not during the day, mishat shchitato, when it is slaughtered. But why is it so essential that the offering be eaten at night? The obligation and the accompanying warning is particularly striking when we consider the fact that other singular symbols of holidays in the Torah, rituals required that have come to embody the very essence of that sacred day, are performed only during the day and not at night. Thus, shofar on Rosh Hashanah is an obligation that is fulfilled only during the day. Lulav on Sukkot is the same, but the ultimate embodiment of Pesach, the offering that gives the celebration its name, must be eaten in the evening, and there is a special obligation of eating matzah that evening as well. The point, perhaps, is that the ritual emphasizes the coming of salvation in a dark time. We are meant to imagine the night of Egypt and the slavery, the servitude, that darkness would have embodied, as well as the coming of redemption in the midst of the night. Hence, a midnight miracle, or as the story of Pesach tells us, Vayhi b'chatzi halayla, it occurred in the midst of the night. We are meant to imagine in our minds, or more accurately, we are meant to remember and re-experience the bravery, the faith, and the fortitude of the Israelites that dwelled in their homes as death stalked outside in the last plague, eating the offering and feeling the protection of the Almighty. We are meant to experience that at night and in the midst of that night to make our ancestors' faith our own and utilize that faith to inspire us. And so that faith has inspired Jews throughout many dark times in Jewish history. In the Ashkenazic liturgical tradition, the morning blessing said before the Shema begins, Ahava Rabba Ahavtanu, with a great love you have loved us. But at night, the opening of the blessing suddenly switches, Ahavat Olam Ahavtanu, with an eternal love you have loved us. Precisely at night, when things may have seemed particularly bleak, then the eternity of God's love for his covenantal people was emphasized, so that, to paraphrase Longfellow, in the hour of peril and darkness and need, people will remember the faith that had come before and the midnight message of the Pesach story, an event commemorated at night, remembered at night, and inspiring Jews every day throughout their lives. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.